My name's Bob, I'm the one who landed the pop-star's job. I'm the one who you told Luke don't touch. I'm the kid who wouldn't amount to much. I believe in the sense inside of sound. I have always been screwed out. Won't you help me drown it out? I'm what I feel, what I'm feeling is surreal. I'm a mess of spinning wheels, always digging in my heels. Now I got the faith.
And at 7 minutes after 7 o'clock, despite the best efforts of terrorists and morons alike, Off the Hook is on the air.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a good evening to everybody. This program is called Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday night. We're here an hour earlier and an hour later tonight as a result of the fundraising drive. And yes, we did say a couple of weeks ago when we were last on that we would, in fact, be on last week for 3 hours. And that didn't happen. And I'm sorry about that, but we were told at the very last minute that there had been a last-minute scheduling snafu, which always seems to involve us for some reason, and we were being postponed until this week. So I can no longer say that I will be at the Dayton Ham Fest next week, because that happened last week, so I guess we'll just strike that part of the program. But I guess we can replace it with the part of the program that says I was at the Dayton Ham Fest last week, and it was a lot of fun. So anybody out there who ran into us, it was a pleasure running into you as well. Porkchop, you're here.
Good afternoon.
All the way down from Poughkeepsie.
That's right.
And it was fun driving in today, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was great. I had lots of fun.
Well, you see, I always sound like I'm flustered, and I guess that's because I always am flustered when I get here. Every week it seems that they throw something new into the mix to make it more difficult, more of a challenge. And today was the real grand slam of fun, where they announced that there's a terrorist threat now. Apparently a terrorist threat against particular streets and intersections, because the police have dutifully closed off streets for no reason at all, with no explanation. I was actually here early. Despite the traffic on the road, I actually made it here, but the police decided to close off Wall Street. No signs, no nothing, just a bunch of smirking cops standing at the intersection, keeping you from going down the street you need to go down. And, I guess that's a real effective way of fighting terrorism, is to get everybody into a big, huge traffic jam where tempers are really running high, you know?
There's people running.
What do you mean people running?
People are running down the middle of the street.
People are running down the middle of the street, screaming. Yeah. That was
no,
me.
Not screaming, just running.
That was me, though, for
they
a
looked
while.
Pretty peaceful, actually.
Well, I don't know. I just don't... the whole purpose, I mean, yeah, terrorism is a bad thing, but you know what? Terrorists rely on surprise. They don't make appointments. They don't say, we're going to be striking this area at this time. Please do what you have to do. They don't do that. And if you believe that that's what they do, then you simply fall into the trap of destroying your society and making everything into chaos, which is what's going on. I mean, the latest thing, they say, hey, do you know what? Suspicious people could move into your apartment building and load an apartment with dynamite and blow it up and bring the whole building down. Oh, you gotta look out for everybody. You gotta know who's living in your place. You have to search their apartments. Anyone suspicious, report to the police immediately. We don't need terrorists. We can destroy our society all on our own. It's not that hard.
What's the color?
The color today. I don't know what the color today is. Do you? Anybody know? Jim, hang on. Let me get you a microphone there. Go ahead.
It is still yellow.
It's still yellow?
Despite all this. In fact, a number of commentators are making hay with that. They're saying...
Okay, but the thing is, the color is for the whole country, right? Not just for the city.
Yeah.
Because I think, looking outside today, I would say the color for the city is bright red. Definitely. If you look at the faces of the people in their cars, it's definitely bright red. In the country, though, it may be more like just plain white. I don't know. Blandness. Nothing. None of glazed eyes. That kind of thing. But, no. The color to be afraid of is yellow now. As it was. As it always has been. All right. Well, we're here on the expanded fundraiser edition of Off the Hook. And the reason for that is so that we can raise money for WBAI, which actually is keeping this radio program on the air. So we encourage people to call in with their generous donations. The number is 212-209-2950. That's the pledge line, right? Or is that the call-in line? I haven't done this in a while.
2950 is the pledge line.
2950 is the pledge line. Okay, thank you very much. Looks like we're up to $400. I don't know if that's us or the previous show. So if it's not us, if the tally person could simply wipe that off the screen, that would be very helpful. Okay, let's do some updates as to what's been going on in the world. And AutoJack also joins us from California.
Yep, I'm right here.
Now you're not in the studio now. You were in the studio last time, but now you're back in San Diego.
Yes, I'm in my studio apartment.
Well, that's great. Studio apartment versus studio. In the radio station, but you will be back here in a few weeks.
That's true.
As we prepare for H2K2, which is coming at us faster than a freight train, and boy, it's going to be an experience and a half. Having been involved in three of these conferences before, and knowing where we stand at this particular stage in time on this one, I'd have to say we've never been so well coordinated. We've never gotten our act together so tightly. And considering we have so much more space this time, considering that it's going to encompass all kinds of different activities, I really have to say this is the one not to miss. If you had to miss any of them, don't miss this one. H2K2, Hackers on Planet Earth, the fourth HOPE conference. It's all taking place July 12th through 14th here in New York City at the Hotel Pennsylvania, right across the street from Penn Station. And we're going to have... tickets to that as part of our fundraiser tonight, so stay tuned for information on that. AutoJack, any adventures flying back? Any drug enforcement agency agents harassing you this time?
No, actually it was pretty eventless, I guess. I stopped in Baltimore, stopped in Nashville, and then I got off the plane and everything was fine.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if we recall, last time AutoJack was on the phone after having returned to California, he had been... detained by DEA agents in San Diego who claimed that there was a drug smuggling ring from Islip, New York to San Diego or some bizarreness like that, and apparently you were the prime suspect.
Right.
But I'm glad everything has worked out.
Yes, everything's worked out.
Okay, well, before I get into news stories and updates and things like that, does anybody have anything they'd like to bring to the floor? No? Okay, everyone's just busy ensconced in their own material there. Okay, fine, no problem. Then what I'm going to do is... actually, Jeff is here, too. You're sitting to the side, so I didn't actually see you.
Sorry.
How you doing? We went to Dayton together, along with Bernie S. And Shapeshifter, the layout artist for 2600, wanted by the Philadelphia police for $500,000 bail last year, or 2 years ago. So, yeah, we were quite a caravan going down the interstate there. Your second hamvention, as they call it out there.
Yes. Yeah, this was the second time, and it was just as much fun. We had some new things this time. I've never seen the bomb-sniffing dogs.
Yeah, you know, that's something else. They introduced bomb-sniffing dogs at a ham fest. Now, who is going to blow up a ham fest? It doesn't make any sense. It's like blowing up a parking lot, really.
Exactly what we were in.
It was a parking lot, yeah, so I guess that would make as much sense. Bomb-sniffing dogs all over the place. And, you know, they were sniffing things they'd never sniffed before, like all kinds of ham gear. I was trying to get Bernie on the line, but unfortunately he doesn't seem to be around.
No, he's around. He spoke to me earlier.
I've been calling him all day.
I
getting his voicemail on Sprint. I know it's Sprint, you know. It's an old Sprint, quality of service. But I'd like for him to be on the line so that we could talk about various things that we've seen. Maybe we can reach him later.
Okay.
But what were your impressions of the Ham Fest this year? As far as
it's always fun. With the second one, I haven't been enough to get bored yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never. You always see different things.
Yeah, that's true.
Each year, it seems to focus in different areas. Made more purchases this time.
Yeah.
Brought back a few more toys.
Uh huh. We brought the 2600 van out there. It's always, you know, a bit of a gamble driving the 2600 van out to Dayton, Ohio. Can't go very fast up those hills, and of course there are mountains out there. And usually we fill it up with back issues and T-shirts and things like that. And this year the attraction was the movie Freedom Downtime, which we showed. We basically set up the van in the parking lot. What happens is you all get a parking space. And you basically pitch your wares from your parking space. And we set up a TV set and just was playing the film, you know, day in, day out, literally. And people would come by and look at it and sometimes buy it and sometimes shake their heads and walk away. But it was great seeing so many people there. And I think it's another part of the culture that we need to stay in touch with is the whole ham radio culture, because it really is a very fascinating one, and it's got a rich history.
Yeah, and it was good to run into some old friends. Mm-hmm. Last year, I got to meet Dan Morgan.
Yeah, Dan Morgan was there again, and he was on the radio show about a year ago, talking about his run-in with the people at DirecTV for his satellite watch newsletter, which they proceeded to shut down and burn, which is one of the great tragedies that I can think of in recent years, and all kinds of other people too that just have this. This insatiable quest for knowledge, which is what we're all about in the hacker community as well. There are people who don't get it. There are people who continue to believe that hackers are criminals, that hackers are the people causing all the problems. But, you know, when you do some research, when you look into it some more, I think you'll find that hackers are the people that are simply figuring it out and telling people how it works. And that's kind of our position here at the radio station. To figure things out, let people know exactly what's going on. Sometimes you won't like what you hear. Sometimes it's going to rub you the wrong way. And sometimes you might find out that something you're doing is insecure, and you'll be called on it. You know, you find that when people running things are told that they're not doing a good job and given reasons why they're not doing a good job, they tend to react against the people telling them that rather than against the problem itself. And I think that's what you find in the world of computer hackers. They're the ones saying the emperor has no clothes, so therefore they're the problem. So that's something we've been battling for many, many years, and we'll probably always be battling that. But I do know, having hung out with people in Ohio and many other places as well, that there are those people in all communities who do get it. Doesn't matter left, right, big, small, doesn't matter. People all over the place get it and understand the things that we're saying and the technology itself, its uses, and abuses. And that's what this radio program is about as well. And we've got a lot of abuses of technology that are happening. Well, I guess we should probably focus on the good news that just came out while I continue to look through all my papers. I mean, I can tell you what the good news is, but I'd like to be able to actually read it. Ah, here it is. Comes straight from the copyright.gov website. Yes, that's right. It's a website called copyright.gov. We've been talking about this this thing called CARP, Copyright Arbitration Royalty Panel. And on February 20th of this year, the Copyright Arbitration Royalty Panel delivered its report recommending rates and terms for the statutory license for eligible non-subscription services to perform sound recordings publicly by means of digital audio transmissions known as webcasting. Basically, this is talking about people who broadcast either radio stations or their own material over the internet. CARP recommended a particular rate structure that would have required all of us who are broadcasting on the internet to keep track of how many people are connecting, what they're listening to, and pay a fee based on that, which would have been prohibitive for the vast majority of web broadcasters. Well, on May 21st, which is today, the Librarian of Congress, based upon the recommendation of the Register of Copyrights, issued an order rejecting the panel's determination proposing rates and terms for these licenses. It has been rejected. Now,
Do we know what they're going to do instead?
No, we don't. There's a very important sentence that follows here, and there's very little on this webpage right now. In such cases, the law provides that the librarian shall issue his final determination within 30 days of his decision to reject the panel's proposed rates and terms. And that final determination is due on June 20th. So basically, we don't know anything other than what we've told you right now, that it's been rejected. On June 20th, some more details will be released. Now, this sounds like great news, and I hope it is, but it could also lead to something else. It could lead to, we don't know why he's rejecting it. He might be rejecting it because... or she. I don't know who the Librarian of Congress is.
It's a male.
It is a male. Do you know his name?
I think it says on the webpage.
I don't see it here. If you see it, feel free to let me know. But, I mean, he might say that these rates are way too low, that they have to be much higher, that they have to be 10 times the price. I don't know. All we know right now is that he rejected the recommendations. Now, hopefully he's rejecting the whole concept of actually having to monitor people and what they listen to, and hopefully reject the whole concept of actually using webcasting as some kind of fee-based structure, which would completely destroy the whole purpose of it. It certainly would cripple what we do here at WBAI and our webcasting, certainly would cripple what Off the Hook does by having radio programs archived. We have to keep track of what everybody does, and even if we didn't have to pay anything, even if we just had to keep track, that in itself would be enough to completely... keep us from doing anything else useful. His name wasn't on that page, was it?
No. Okay. You have to click this link, but that's impossible on the printed copy.
Oh, it's a piece of paper. I can't click the link there. That's right. Okay. Well, so much for that.
If you really want to know, you can go to the website and find out for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Waterjack, you still there? Waterjack has...
Yes, I'm still here.
Ah, okay. You're losing interest, eh? Okay.
No, I had my phone muted.
Okay. Well, that's good news as far as webcasters, I'm sure... Many people out there will be rejoicing on this.
I'm actually trying to look up the name of the Librarian of Congress.
Well, you know, it's not really that important, but if you find out, great. Here's some other news, and this is kind of funny. Technology buffs have cracked music publishing giant Sony Music's elaborate disc copy protection technology with a decidedly low-tech method, scribbling around the rim of a disc with a felt tip marker. That's right. Internet news groups have been circulating news of the discovery for the past week, and in typical news group style, users have pilloried Sony for deploying high-tech copy protection that can be defeated by paying a visit to a stationery store. The theory now is that they'll ban magic markers, that they'll say magic markers are a tool to circumvent copy protection. Unbelievable. So, yeah, okay, we've established that their copy protection schemes suck, that they are absolutely useless. And simply by scribbling a particular part of the disc out, you can completely defeat that. Basically, Sony's proprietary technology deployed on many recent releases works by adding a track to the copy-protected disc that contains bogus data. Now, because computer hard drives are programmed to read data files first, the computer will continuously try to play the bogus track. It never gets to play the music tracks located elsewhere on the computer disc. And the effect is that the copy-protected disc will play on standard CD players, but not on computer CD-ROMs and some portable devices and even some car stereo systems. Now, some Apple Macintosh users have reported that playing the disc in the computer's CD drive causes the computer to crash. The cover of the copy-protected discs contain a warning that the album will not play on Macintoshes or other personal computers, and Apple has since posted a warning on its website. In fact, we have that warning right here, where they basically describe the symptom. You insert an audio disc which is not recognized by the computer. The audio disc will not eject, and the computer starts up to a gray screen when the disc is in the optical drive. Products affected: any Macintosh computer with an optical drive capable of accepting CD-ROM audio discs. Now, they offer this solution. A small number of audio discs use a copy protection technology that can prevent the disc from being read by a computer. This may also prevent the disc from being ejected. The audio discs are technically and legally not compact discs, and the CD logo has been removed from the disc, but the in the logo's former place is a printed message, "Will not play on PC/Mac. This appears both on the cover and on the disc. Inserting this disc in a computer may cause the system to stop responding. It might not be possible to eject the disc on computers without a manual eject hole. Porkchop, you're familiar with Macintoshes. Are there Macintoshes that actually don't have the manual eject hole?
There are a few that it's very difficult to find the manual eject hole on, I believe. I don't think I can recall having seen one that don't. Mm-hmm. The earlier iMacs, the newer iMacs or whatnot, mm-hmm. May not. What I've been hearing from some people actually is that the firmware gets overwritten on some of these CD drives. And actually, there's another person right now in the studio who knows a little bit more about that.
The latest iMacs that look like desk lamps apparently do not have manual eject holes.
Oh, great. So if you have a brand new one, you can break it by doing this.
And it's apparently a fairly non-trivial matter to get it taken apart to the point mm-hmm. where it can be ejected.
But then you have to take it apart.
Well, here's what is being recommended on the Apple.com page. If you still cannot eject the disk, if a disk with copyright protection technology remains inside the drive after following the procedures above, or if the computer does not start up normally, it is recommended that you contact an Apple-authorized service provider or Apple technical support. Audio discs that incorporate copyright protection technologies do not adhere to published compact disc standards. Apple designs its optical disc drives to support media that conform to such standards. In other words, it's not our fault this is happening to you. And you actually have to take your computer in to be fixed for putting a copy-protected CD in certain computers. Now, this, to me, is nothing short of vandalism of your computer by these companies that are trying to protect or enhance their profits. I just cannot believe that they are not being hauled into court right away for doing this to people's computer systems. People who are trying to use disks in computers that they have bought, disks they've bought as well, And this is how they're being treated. It's simply unbelievable. It's far worse than any amount of copying of music that has taken place. I mean, you can say what you want about Napster. You can say what you want about music piracy. But I don't recall this kind of effect where people's property is destroyed in this particular way. Now, we have a list of bad CDs. No kidding. We actually have a list of CDs that people have cataloged in this way. Star Wars Episode II soundtrack. That's right. And the Spider-Man soundtrack. These discs are reported corrupt in the UK and Holland. There was a message saying will not play on PC Mac on the packaging. On a Pioneer 626D DVD player, the audio sounds very thin, like AM radio, and yet other CDs play without a problem. A computer fails completely to play the disc. The Dutch version is reported to skip and have poor sound quality on a Philips CD player, etc. They go into a lot more detail as far as the quality of the disc, too. I'll just read you the titles. White Ladder by David Gray, More Fast and Furious. Laundry Service by Shakira. Many recent Sony releases, including Epic or Columbia labels. A New Day Has Come by Celine Dion. Green Eyed Soul by Sarah Connor. J to the L-O, The Remixes by Jennifer Lopez. This is the remix by Destiny's Child. MTV Unplugged 2.0 by Lauryn Hill. Heart to Yours by Michelle Williams. And Masquerade by Wyclef Jean. Better Days by Joe. Greatest Hits by Five. White Lily's Island by Natalie Imbruglia. Flickering Flame by Roger Waters. Cream Anthems, Spring 2002, The Gallery, The Mind's Eye by Dark Tranquility, Global Underground, Moscow by Deep Dish, Greatest Hits Chapter 1 by The Backstreet Boys, World of Our Own by Westlife, Gold by Steps, All This Time by Sting, Take Off Your Pant and Jackets by Blink-182, Cartoon Medley by The Cartoon Network, The Best of Blondie, Genesis 1 by VNV Nation, Rain on Lens by Smog, Super Stylin' by Groove Armada, Celebrity by NSYNC, The Best of Deacon Blue, Very Best Of by Robert Palmer, and Anthology by Bob Newhart. Okay, I Am Sam soundtrack, Pieces in a Modern Style by William Orbit, Simple Things by 07, Four Heroes new album, the Michael Jackson promo single, You Rock My World, and Charlie Pride, a tribute to Jim Reeves. That's one of the ones that... we've been following for a couple of years, actually, with all kinds of copy protection in it. So, any of those discs will not play on computers and may actually destroy your computer.
Now, when the computer companies actually see this, when they actually find a way to get around it, which will this quick, short order, I'm sure, and they change it a little bit to maybe, you know, eject the CD instead of hard crash the computer, they're going to get sued, aren't they?
I would imagine so. I would imagine there's litigation already being planned on this. I just can't believe they thought they could get away with it.
It's incredible.
It's really something. It really is. This is what they will resort to bolster their profits. They will actually destroy your equipment for daring to try and play a CD in a CD player, which is what every computer is. Every computer has a CD player. How dare they issue something that they forbid you from using in particular pieces of hardware that you already own. What I suggest, and what I hope many, many people do, since these are not CDs, and we all agree they are not CDs, they don't fit the classification of CDs, go to your local record store, find these records, find these CDs that have been misplaced into the CD section of your store, and move them someplace else. That is the only way that we'll get the message across. Unbelievable. Anyway, injustices like that. If you're tuning into this program for the first time because you're expecting to hear Mike Levine, who's not on this week but will be on next week, we come on at 8 o'clock usually, and we're on for an hour, and we talk about things like this. We talk about technology and its uses and many abuses, and this is just another abuse against individual people that is being perpetrated on us. And it's probably one of the more bizarre cases, but it manifests itself in many different ways. Occasionally, people like us get sued because we dare to tell people how DVDs work, and that case actually is hopefully headed for the Supreme Court. And if we don't make it to the Supreme Court, somebody else will. We're just going to keep fighting until we get an audience who will understand. I know the audience that's out there understands, but it's something that I guess you got to reach mainstream America. And having been in Dayton, Ohio, I can say I talk to a lot of mainstream America, and they understand. They see what's going on. And the world's being pulled over their eyes. We're being told that people aren't capable of understanding certain technological issues. It's not true. It really isn't. Once you describe things in a particular way, people do get it. You know, it's... explaining the DVD case to people was difficult, because how do you explain that the difference between decrypting a file and copying a file? It's, you know, for the average person who has no interest whatsoever in computers, I can see it being a little bit difficult. But once you're able to do that, once you're able to actually get the explanation out there, it does make a difference. All right, let's give out our phone number, 212-209-2950 is the pledge line. We need to hear from people out there as far as supporting this radio station. We're going to have a special premium. We have what, a thank you? Go ahead.
We have one Thank you. It's from someone who's very good at being the first person to call, Mr. Rebel.
Rebel actually made a pledge.
Rebel made a pledge. So he can't be our only pledge, so we better get some more people to call.
Okay, well, we're going to send people out there to make sure that Rebel...
The $400?
No, Rebel didn't pledge $400. Oh, but down to $100. How'd that happen? I've never seen the pledge go down before.
Well, they reset it to zero.
Okay, I guess that's what happened.
Yeah.
I thought maybe people took back their pledges when they heard their Rebel. No, but thanks, Rebel. Thanks for the pledge. And
So people who want to, replace Rebel can call 212-209-2950 and please give us someone else to thank.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I guess we should talk about the film because that's kind of what the theme of this show is going to be tonight. Again, we're on until 10 o'clock, but we're also joining forces with Nuff Said, and we could be here as long as midnight for all we know. The film is out. We were showing it at the Dayton Ham Fest, and it got quite a good reaction. It's gotten a good reaction in just about all the places that that we have shown it. In fact, here's a copy of it right here. I'm going to toss it over to you, Porkchop. What do you think? How's the reaction been on your end?
On my end, the reaction's been pretty good, actually. I showed it, actually, at Marist College up in Poughkeepsie and at a film class there. And there were a couple of people who, sat in the back and were disinterested, as normal college students are. And then there were some that really took an interest and, stopped me after the class was over and asked, how did we do it? Oh, that's too bad about what happened to Kevin. I didn't know that things like that happened before. And one girl said, I knew nothing about hacking before I saw this, and you guys did a really great job in making it not boring. And so it's been appreciated pretty much by anybody who actually watched it.
Yeah. It's quite a feeling to actually hear from people who have seen it. This is their first taste of the hacker world, and they actually understand the points that are being made. We got this terrific letter. I want to read this letter. This is probably one of the best letters I've ever seen. Because it really hits me, because it's exactly what we were trying to do, exactly the people we were trying to reach. Greetings Off the Hook and Freedom Downtime crew. Just wanted to let you know I saw Freedom Downtime this week and loved it. I have to give you all credit for having the integrity to not only show the hacker viewpoint, but to also fairly represent the viewpoint of those who wronged Kevin Mitnick. It is one thing to whine that people aren't being fair, another to show their perspective and then use critical thinking and good communication to explain why their actions are not fair to the hacker community. Beyond that, you managed to produce a film that has effectively told the story of several wronged social engineers without being so arrogant that no one outside the hacker community could understand what you were talking about. My computer skills and interests stop at email, word processing, and Minesweeper, but I have deep respect for those who work to understand and educate others about modern technology. I never would have heard about Freedom Downtime if my husband weren't a faithful listener of Off the Hook. But I'm so glad he ordered the film, and even happier that it was made in such a way to hold my interest for 2 hours. Last week on Off the Hook, you mentioned that you hadn't received any criticisms about the film. I can understand why. I do, however, have a question about the stories of Kevin, Bernie, and others interviewed for the film. It was mentioned that there is no centralized group with the resources to protect hackers when they are harassed by police and other government agencies. Although I agree that such an organization is needed and that a separate court and penal system should probably be established to handle technocrime, it seems to me that the real problem here is that civil rights are being totally ignored. Maybe I've missed something because I am not a regular follower of these cases, but I was really surprised to hear that the ACLU hadn't been contacted for help. Regardless of the truth through a charge, the severity of a crime or the hysterical panic in the court systems, there are some things that are simply not allowed in our Constitution. Obviously, sitting in jail for a week, to say nothing of years, without a bail hearing is asinine. So is the idea that gross intimidation and theft, there is no other word, of computer systems teaches hackers a lesson about invading other systems. So I want to know, did anyone get the ACLU involved in any of these cases? And if not, why not? If the ACLU and NAACP can fight for the civil rights of racial minorities, homosexuals, and the obese, why not hackers? Thanks for raising awareness of this problem, and best of luck with your fundraiser. Signed, Chris from the Netherlands. And really glad we got a letter like this because it shows that we can reach people in all different communities. As far as the ACLU, the ACLU has been contacted numerous times. Unfortunately, the response has been less than spectacular. I think that... a lot of the conceptions about hackers have made it into their opinions as well. we need a group that actually is able to understand technologically what is going on here and see the subtleties of rights violations on a technological scale. It's my hope that the ACLU will come on board and will be a valuable part of hacker defense in the future, because we're certainly going to see a lot of prosecutions. That moment is not now, though. I certainly hope that it comes soon. So what we're going to do is we're going to play a little bit of Freedom Downtime and give out our phone number, 212-209-2950. We have a Freedom Downtime package. Actually, we have a couple of Freedom Downtime packages. For a pledge of $75, you can receive a copy of Freedom Downtime, the two-hour documentary on the Kevin Mitnick movement, the Free Kevin movement, and the hacker culture. 2 hours. It's a lot of material and a lot of variety, too. 212-209-2950 is our phone number. And for a pledge of $75, you will get the Freedom Downtime package in addition to a T-shirt, our brand-new corporate T-shirt. Can you understand what they're saying on there? You keep looking at the board. What are they saying?
It says repeat the phone number many times.
Okay, well, I am repeating the phone number many times.
Yeah, well.
212. You know, maybe somebody could just repeat it while I talk, sort of as, you know, a background noise. No, let's not do that instead.
209-2950.
Okay, we know the phone number. 212-209-2950. Where's the little thing that lights up and tells you how many calls? Oh, there it is. It's hidden. Okay, put that over there.
That's good work.
Maybe somebody could prop it up. It doesn't happen again. According to that, assuming it's plugged in, we have zero calls on the line. Zero calls. It's 212-209-2950. We have $200, so obviously it's ringing. Obviously it works. There it goes. Okay, it's ringing. Hopefully that's somebody that actually is calling to make a pledge, not just to make the light up. 212-209-2950 is the phone number. And for a pledge of $75, you'll get a copy of our documentary, Freedom Downtime, which runs 2 hours and 1 minute. And you'll also get a corporate T-shirt. Now, when we say corporate T-shirt, what we mean is a list of all the lawsuits that we have been subjected to over the past however many years we've been publishing, along with a really terrific graphic on the front that kind of symbolizes the whole thing. You'll get all that for a pledge of $75. Now, for a pledge of $125, you'll get all of that plus a pair of tickets to the H2K2 convention, which is taking place this July in New York City, July 12th through 14th. Now, considering the conference cost $50, if you add 50 to 75, that comes out to 125. So it's you're really getting a good deal here. 212-209-2950, pledge for any of those packages. Also, you might want to consider just pledging for the sake of pledging, because that's what it's all about. Supporting the radio station. 212-209-2950. Without further ado, I'd like to play the first part of Freedom Downtime, the first of several pieces that we're going to have here. What you're going to hear are a couple of people talking about the hacking community, what hacking is all about. You'll hear somebody outside of McDonald's playing with some radio frequencies and doing something that they probably shouldn't be doing, but it's funny all the same. You'll hear the Kevin Mitnick timeline, kind of background history as to what was happening with Kevin and what put him where he was at that particular time. Also, preparations for the first Hackers on Planet Earth conference and an explanation of the solitary confinement that Kevin Mitnick had to go through. You'll hear from people such as John Lepkowski, Reba Vartanian, who is Kevin Mitnick's grandmother, Alex Casper, Jeff Moss, Katie Hefner, Bruce Sterling, Wynn Schwartau, Roger Slates, and at the very end, you'll hear something absolutely amazing. You'll hear the sound of the media. That's right. This is one of those things that you just have to see to believe, and unfortunately, this is radio, so you're only going to be able to hear it. Let's listen to the first part of Freedom Downtime. 212-209-2950 is our phone number. Please call in, pledge now, receive a copy of the film, receive tickets to H2K2 and a T-shirt. Most of all, support the radio station, 212-209-2950.
If you go somewhere you're not supposed to be and bring something back to show people, that always struck me as being a whole lot like a panty raid. And you know, panty raids are are really in the grandest tradition of this country. Try to make your way in there, get the stuff, and get back out with it without getting your head cut off.
Yeah, what we're doing here is we're talking on McDonald's, the external speaker for their drive-thru. And what we're doing to do that is we have a modified ham radio, modified meaning it transmits on frequencies other than the ones it was intended to transmit on. In this case, it's standard business band frequencies. 154.6 megahertz seems to be the standard McDonald's frequency.
Hey, the blonde, would you please kneel down for a second?
Could one of you please take off your tops? We'll give you the food for free.
Bastard, you better stop getting smart.
Here comes the manager.
Really?
While corporate America would always be the playground of hackers, it was mostly about fun and exploration, not damage or profit. But try telling that to corporate America. Kevin Mitnick had already paid a heavy price for his curiosity. He had served a year and a half in 1988 for logging into DEC computers without authorization. By simply looking at the VMS operating system, DEC claimed he caused millions of dollars in damage, and he was sentenced as if he had caused that amount of physical damage. He was also held without bail, and they put him in solitary confinement for 8 months because they thought he could do even more damage from the prison payphone. After his sentence, Kevin had to serve 3 years of supervised release, reporting to the authorities every month and being restricted in where he could go and what he could do. And he only had a few days to go when federal authorities decided he had violated the terms of his supervised release by associating with Louis DePayne and accessing someone's voicemail without permission. It was nothing, but it was enough. Knowing how the media and the court system would crucify him over any offense because he could start World War III from a payphone, Kevin decided to just walk away.
I was devastated. We were never far away from each other. And how was he living on his own without his family to share things with? It was horrible. What kind of a life is this? He is not streetwise. He's a home person.
Kevin managed to avoid attention. Then, on July 4th, 1994, everything changed. A front page story in the New York Times turned Kevin Mitnick into a household word all over again. The evil-looking picture, the mythical stories about breaking into NORAD computers and controlling all the telephones in California, even the Security Pacific news release tale was retold as fact. Nobody could figure out how the story made it onto the front page of the Times, since there was nothing new in the story. But the author was no stranger. John Markoff, who was quickly becoming a Mitnick expert without ever having met him. We looked at the story as an amusement back then. A bunch of us were putting together the first Hackers on Planet Earth conference that August. The story had gotten so big that we all walked around with Mitnick masks.
They came here to the Hotel Pennsylvania by the hundreds. These usually anonymous creatures of the cyber world, better known as hackers, were holding a convention.
Throughout that weekend, Kevin called in several times to say hi. We all wished he could be there, but we knew why he was running. One of the things Markoff hadn't mentioned in his article was the 8 months of solitary confinement.
You know, the guy was in solitary confinement for 8 months. 8 months. Think about it. I mean, that would definitely change a man to a several degree. You would run. You would not want that because it was 8 months, not for anything he did, but because the judge was scared. And if you get someone who is that unaware of actually what he can do and thinks that he can destroy the world, if you have someone that has that much power over you who will put you in solitary confinement, you're going to run. It makes perfect sense to me.
I think it's part hype, part hysteria, part lack of understanding, and part fear.
Solitary confinement means no books, no pencil, no paper, no company, nothing to do but stare at these small four walls. You would get out 1 hour a day, and that's it.
Well, you know, he might whistle up some missile launch codes. You know, that's a big problem with hackers nowadays. They get a little pissed off and they launch some nukes by whistling, you know. The fear factor is just insane.
Once or twice, or maybe more, I can't even remember, but they didn't even bring him down to the visitor's room. They took my daughter and I upstairs to a floor that wasn't occupied at that time. We were the only ones there and the guard. They were hovering over him as though he was an absolute monster. What could he possibly do? You know? Could he make a computer out of the telephone? Or, I don't know what they were afraid of. First of all, he had no desire to. Secondly, it wouldn't have accomplished anything. Thirdly, he couldn't do it.
Kevin managed to elude the authorities into the next year. Then, on February 15, 1995, they found him in Raleigh, North Carolina.
The FBI's most wanted computer hacker is behind bars. Kevin Mitnick was jailed without bond in Raleigh, North Carolina, where he was arrested this week. He's accused of breaking into corporate computers nationwide. Private computer experts say so many other hackers are at work that privacy is virtually impossible.
The FBI had managed to track Kevin with the help of a mysterious computer expert, Tsutomu Shimomura, who, along with some friends, had managed to track Kevin's cellular phone signal to the apartment he was staying in. One of Shimomura's friends who was there while the cellular signal was being traced was none other than John Markoff, who wrote an even bigger front page story this time.
Sure enough, I opened the door the next day to the hotel room, and there was the Times outside the door, and I picked it up, and I just thought, oh my God.
This article had a whole new list of things that Kevin had supposedly done, including breaking into Shimomura's ultra-secure computer, leaving nasty voicemail messages, and stealing 20,000 credit card numbers, something that was mentioned in the first paragraph on the front page. But 13 paragraphs later on page D17, it was revealed that he had never used any of them. In fact, this was a list of credit card numbers that had been left lying around by internet service provider Netcom for almost a year.
Netcom credit card file. Everybody had that file. If you didn't have that file, you were a loser. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of people had that. They swapped it around like, bubblegum or something. And then they claim that he's the one that did it and he's the one that had it when that was floating around for months before he theoretically had it.
Everybody and his sister's got a million credit card numbers. What's the big deal with credit card numbers? It's a meaningless thing to have. I mean, what I want to know is, did he threaten anybody in any way? Did he claim he was going to do some particular set of harm? Are there any notebooks that show that he had plans to, conspire to commit any particular thing? I mean, other than humiliating Tsutomu Shimomura, which any idiot who's ever met Shimomura could have told him, this was not the guy to mess with. I met Shimomura once. The first time I met Shimomura, it was in front of Congress. And I was testifying to a congressional subcommittee. And here's this guy in sandals and like ragged ass cutoffs. And the rest of us are like done up and tied. And it's me and like the attorney general from New Jersey. And we're sitting there and we're giving our best sort of, yes, we're in front of Congress thing. And Shimomura's there and this, surfer gear. And he like pulls out this AT&T cell phone, pulls it out of the shrink wrap, finger hacks it, and starts monitoring phone calls going up and down Capitol Hill while an FBI agent is standing at his shoulder listening to him. I'm like, this f***er's got balls the size of durian fruit. This is unbelievable. This is the heaviest guy I've ever seen doing. He's hacking, right? He was finger hacking this phone in front of Congress with two FBI agents and John Gage from Sun Microsystems in the room from him. And I was like, wow, I was impressed.
Inside of a week, Shimomura and Markoff had signed a book deal estimated to be worth $750,000. It would be another 19 months before Kevin would even be indicted. The book, entitled Takedown, was finished by the end of the year.
When I read it, I was aghast. I was aghast. It was Tsutomu's eating and skateboarding habits. I'd been to a lot of the restaurants he'd been to, but I don't think I needed a hacker book to tell me about them.
Takedown, wow. I don't know what I want to say about Takedown.
Takedown was not well received. 1996 came and went, as did 1997. Kevin remained in prison without even a bail hearing, and no prospect of a trial anytime soon. A 25-count indictment accused him of nothing more serious than lying on the telephone about who he was, and copying software which he never tried to sell or even distribute. Nothing about hacking into Shimomura's machine. Nothing about having 20,000 credit card numbers. Nothing that would have appeared in a John Markoff story. North Carolina had also charged him with making free cellular phone calls. Kevin was given a 2-year sentence, more than he would have gotten for manslaughter. But the federal charges still remained. They even put him in solitary confinement again because the prison authorities convinced themselves that he was going to build a transmitter out of a Walkman, sneak into the warden's office, and monitor his conversations. The mainstream media made light of it, claiming Mitnick was put in solitary for having too many cans of tuna. What everyone seemed to forget was that years were going by, and this guy had yet to be tried. And then things got a whole lot worse. June 1998. A movie version of Takedown was announced. Skeet Ulrich, who played a killer in Scream, was set to play Kevin Mitnick, and Russell Wong from the Joy Luck Club would be Tsutomu Shimomura. It didn't seem to matter to anyone that the real-life Kevin was still rotting in prison without a trial. According to the script we managed to get our hands on, he had been found guilty and sentenced already. The magic of Hollywood. They even brought Kevin and Tsutomu closer. In real life, they had only met for a few seconds in the courtroom. In the Hollywood version, they met in a dark alleyway, where Kevin would proceed to bash Tsutomu over the head with a garbage can lid. We had to tell the world that this was a big mistake. The truth needed to be told, and we could either do it ourselves or use the media. That's right, the media, democracy's biggest allies, committed to informing the public, no matter the cost, the true conscience of America.
Get out of the way, Brad! Brad! Watch yourself! Brad! Come on, guys. Brad!
Don't yell at me. Everyone's in front of me.
Well, tell him to come back. He's coming to the mic.
Coming to the mic.
All right. Gabe, come back. Would you guys get down, Gabe?
Hold it.
What is going on?
He's going to the mic.
Hey, watch the mic. Watch the mic. The mic.
Come on. Let's get out of the way.
Gabe. Christine. Larry. Let's get out of here. Come on, guys. Larry Morris.
We decided to do it ourselves. Okay. Oh, boy. That was from Freedom Downtime, and that, of course, the famous media scene, which you just have to see to believe. Porkchop, you've seen it more times than anybody could believe because you edited the film. But
I remember getting, when you brought in that that section of tape which you had recorded off of
CNN. Yeah,
CNN. That's right. CNN just sort of set their camera down and sat back, and
that was back in the good days. Happen. Yeah, when they didn't say things all the time, when they just let stuff happen. And this had to do with a particular news event that was taking place. And the media was just trying to get their microphones and cameras together while somebody was walking to the microphone. It was a big story, and they all were freaking out, and they literally would not shut up, and they would not move. And this represents to me what the mass media is all about. And that's why I think it said very well what we were trying to say, that the media was not going to do the job for us. We had to do this ourselves. And that's why we made the film. And that's why we continue to do the radio show. And that's why you out there should support this radio station, 212-209-2950, because it's been the combined efforts of people here, 2600 and various other places, that were able to bring you alternative news stories like this. And they manifest themselves in many different ways, in magazines, on radio programs, and now through films. You can participate in this, support the radio station, keep us on the air, keep us going, and we will send you a copy of Freedom Downtime, which you just heard an excerpt from, 212-209-2950. We have another excerpt, which is really pretty good, that we want to play after this. But first, we have to get some phone calls, because people have been sitting back and relaxing a little bit too much, and we need to build up the numbers. 212-209-2950 for a pledge of $75. You'll get Freedom Downtime and the corporate lawsuit T-shirt that represents how many times 2600 has been sued by various entities. And that's a pledge of $75. For $125, you get all of that, Freedom Downtime, the 2600 corporate T-shirt, and tickets, a pair of tickets to the H2K2 convention. In fact, this is something that I neglected to mention before. I said that that you're getting a good deal by only adding $50 to the other pledge. You're actually getting a better deal than that because it's two tickets, and two tickets are worth $100. 212-209-2950 is our phone number. So for a pledge of $125, you're actually, you see, this is part of the whole debate over premiums. People, I believe, should be pledging to the radio station because they want to pledge to the radio station. All right, we shouldn't have to entice you with all this stuff, but since we have the stuff to entice you with, we're donating it to the radio station. That's our way of making a pledge. If you really want to look at cost factor here, what you are paying for this pledge is actually less than what you would pay for these items if you bought them from us, which tells you that's a really good deal. 212-209-2950 for a pledge of $125, a pair of tickets to the H2K2 convention worth $50 each, a copy of the film Freedom Downtime, two-hour documentary, which is worth $20, and the 2600 T-shirt, the newest T-shirt that we have with the corporate lawsuits, which is worth, I think, $15. So add all that together, and it comes to more than $125, but we're just asking for $125 for that particular package. We also have the $75 package of Freedom Downtime and the T-shirt. And, of course, any pledge is welcome, because if you just want to support the radio station, let's say you already have these things, or let's say you have absolutely no interest in going to H2K2, or you don't have a VCR or things like that, and you just want to support the station, then please call us, 212-209-2950. We have 5 calls on the line. We want to make that 10 calls, because we need to raise those numbers a bit before we can go back to the next clip of the film.
Now, we should point out that during the last clip of the film, you heard there was a little section that was bleeped out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's AutoJack. You helped put this together for the presentation tonight.
Well, yes, I did.
Now, there was something about that tone that sounded familiar.
Yeah, it was a 2600 hertz tone.
That's it. It was a 2600 hertz tone, and we're called 2600, so now I understand how it all fits together.
It's very clever, yes.
Yeah, so every time there's an obscenity, and yeah, there are some salty words in our documentary.
There's 2 in the next one.
Yeah, okay, well, let's not give away too much, but yeah, you will hear the 2600 hertz tone in lieu of the obscenity, because this is FCC territory, and we don't want to tread too heavily on it. So yeah, that won't be in the film. The film has a completely unedited version there, so don't worry about that. We're only doing this for the radio audience. You know, there are people driving around with their infant kids who might be offended.
Also, if you live in a third world country, I don't suggest holding your radio up to the telephone, like while you're listening to this.
That's true, because you might still be using in-band signaling, and it could disconnect your phone call, assuming you're on the phone. 212-209-2950, and some technical things, too. It is a VHS tape, and it's NTSC, which means that it's for use in the United States and Western Hemisphere, but I understand everybody overseas can also read NTSC, unlike the PAL standard, which we cannot read here in this country.
Yeah, I'm mistaken, but can't you write off your pledges here to the station?
Oh yeah, it's a pledge to a nonprofit organization, so it's completely tax deductible.
So good someone point. Could get tickets to the festival and mm-hmm. The conference and a videotape and write it off at the same time.
Technically that's true, although the things that we are giving you are our way of saying thank you for you pledging to us. You're not actually buying the tickets, you're making a donation, and we're saying, well, for this donation we will send you this amount of thank yous. And that's how we choose to express ourselves in that particular way. So yeah, it can you can definitely make this work to your advantage. 212-209-2950 is our phone number. It is very important though that you not only make the pledge but you pay the pledge. That way, you will be on the list. We will send you the tickets that you need in time for the conference, because the conference is July 12th through 14th here in New York City, and we certainly don't want anybody to miss that if they made a pledge. So 212-209-2950. And one way to ensure that you don't have any time problems is if you use a credit card, because that way it happens immediately. 212-209-2950.
We should also point out that the BAI still has its own